Right. He's paying attention. This guy.
This guy right here. Welcome to the branch. Very glad that you're here. As Bethany said, our family's been out of town a couple weeks. And, you know, you don't know what you got until it's gone. It's good to be back. It's good to be back. And can I just say, way to go on the 10-15 thing that we're trying to do. I mean, I'm not just saying that, like, way to go. A lot of you are showing up when we're asking you to show up, and someone said to me today, it's really hard on a Sunday. You know, like, we're punctual every other day of the week, but Sunday's like the day when we get to just chill, and here we are asking something of you to be prompt, and you're doing it, and it makes a difference. Again, last week we were gone, but I got a text message in the afternoon on Sunday from my brother who said, hey, good thing we're doing this 10-15 thing, because there were a couple new families that joined us, and they were here at 10:08. I'm like, yep, there it is, right? This is what we're trying to do. If you're new, by the way, welcome. And you're wondering, like, why are you? We're trying to create a welcoming, warm, hospitable place for you to enter into. And for us, that means actually showing up early, if not on time. So, way to go, Branch. Keep it up. Just so you know, in August, we're going to take things up a notch, try and continue to incentivize you by having actual food before worship. And only before worship. We will not serve it after if there are leftovers. You must come beforehand. It's the only chance you'll get. All right. Anybody want to guess how many Google searches happen every day?
A billion.
A billion. That's a fair guess. Anybody else want to throw out another guess? You don't, if you cheated at my notes, you may not answer the question, young man. Anybody else? 1 billion is our guess at the moment.
9 million.
9 million. It's a lot.
9 million one.
Now the
8 million.
Well played, sir. 3.5 billion every day, which means 40,000 searches every second. 40,000. 40,000. 40,000, right? Why do we do all of those searches? I think in part, it's because we're desperate to remember who was in that film from the 80s that we can't recall, you know, when we're sitting around dinner with friends. But I think it's also just because we believe that information is critical to living life well. That's a commonly shared, I think, assumption in our world. And information is valuable. It is important. But have you ever noticed that information alone is not enough? Having all of the facts does not provide what we need in most situations in life. You can Google the living daylights out of a TV and find a TV with the specs that are best for your home, but Google does not tell you if you should buy a TV. Is it a wise financial decision at the moment? How much should you spend on said television? What's an appropriate amount? What happens if your significant other doesn't think you should buy the television right now? How much collateral damages are going to be from this purchase? Google does not tell you any of these things, right? A lot. So this may be happening in our home. It may not. You can research a certain career path. You can get all the information about how much money you can make, and where the jobs are for that career, and what qualifications you need, and what degree you might need to get. But all of that information does not tell you if it's the career path that you should choose. It does not tell you if you should quit your current job in order to go back to school and pursue that job. It does not tell you if you should uproot your family and move across the country because that's where the jobs are. Information alone is not enough, nor is morality enough. Moral standards are important, very important. But they alone do not address, again, most of the situations that we encounter in life. Think about this for a moment. Is helping someone get out of poverty a good thing? Yes, it is. This is a moral standard we, I think, would be able to agree on. But how do you do it? How do you do it? Because if you don't have wisdom, which is what we're talking about in this series, you could make a muck of their life and of your own. You could hurt all kinds of people trying to do this morally good thing if you don't understand the complexities of poverty and the unique situation that this individual finds themselves in and all of this. Information alone isn't enough. Moral standards and principles aren't enough. What we need desperately is wisdom. What's so interesting to me, though, is that we don't train each other in wisdom. We have ways of training each other how to get information. There are schools, you may have noticed. There are schools you can go to and your children can go to. And all of my kids from 6 to 12 know about Google. Like, we know and we train each other in acquiring knowledge, which, again, is a really, really, really good thing. And we train each other in morality, in moral principles. Three-year-olds are taught not to punch their sibling in the face, right? Like, this happens as we grow up. We are taught what is right and what is wrong, and that is a good thing, too. But do we train each other in gaining wisdom? Maybe. Maybe you were fortunate to have a parent or an adult mentor who could bring you up in the ways of wisdom. But let's be honest, a lot of parents today are fools. I mean, a lot of people are growing up without an adult in their life who can teach them and lead them in the way of wisdom. It's just truth. This is reality. Does it happen in school? Maybe. Maybe you come across, again, an adult, a teacher, who kind of does the extra work outside of the classroom to lead you in the way of wisdom. But maybe not. It's interesting that what we need most is what we are not talking about a whole lot. In ancient Israel, if you were a kid, you would grow up reading the ancient scriptures that were considered wisdom literature. In our Bible, we call them by these names: Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. The wisdom literature in the scriptures. And if you were a kid growing up, you would read these every day at school, which is nothing like our schools. But nonetheless, you would gather with a community and you would hash these things out. You wouldn't just read them, you would talk about them and argue them. And a wise mentor, a teacher, an adult would lead you in helping kind of parse out. You'd read this proverb and go, well, that doesn't make sense because I saw that happen. The opposite thing happened the other day over in the market. And you would have this interesting back and forth. And for years, a community would gather around these texts to train people in wisdom. We don't do that anymore. So good news, we're going to do a 7-week series and just take care of it. Just kind of wrap it right up. Should be easy. No problem, you know. What we're hoping to do over the next 7 weeks is take some initial steps to kind of reimagine what it might be like to be intentional about growing in wisdom. So today we're getting started in Proverbs 8. And I need a couple of people who would be willing to come up and read that section of Proverbs that we are going to be kind of paying attention to today. Would anyone be willing to come up here and read just a few verses of Scripture? And I got a lot of kids. Kids generally are more willing, but adults, you're welcome to. Caleb, you can come on up. Awesome. Caleb, you're going to get us started. Chris Frank, thank you so much. Anyone else? Just one more, folks. You got two brave people. Oh, Luke and JP. He beat you. He was in the front row. This is all right. Caleb, you're here because you're number one. You're number two. Number three. These are going to be on the screen, too. So if you can't hear these guys, well, that's all right. This is Proverbs 8. We're not going to read the whole thing, but a good chunk of it. If you're a reader up here, you have to read clearly, slowly, and loudly. Can you do that?
How slow?
At a pace that would allow others to hear you well. Go for it, Caleb. Get us started. Proverbs 8.
Listen as wisdom calls out. Hear as
Excellent. Go ahead. Discernment. Yep. Discernment. Yep.
All who fear the Lord shall hate evil. Therefore, I hate pride and arrogance, corruption and perverse speech. Common sense and success belong to me. Insult and strength are mine. Because of me, kings reign, and rulers may discuss with me. Rulers
awesome.
The Lord formed me from the beginning, before he created anything else. I was appointed in ages past, at the very first, before the earth began. I was before the oceans were created, before the springs bubbled forth their waters, before the mountains were formed, before the hills, I was born. Before he made the earth and the fields, and the first handfuls of soil, I was there when he established the heavens, when he drew the horizon of the ocean. I was there when he set the clouds above, when he established springs deep in the earth. I was there when he set the limits of the seas, so they would not spread beyond their boundaries. And when he marked off the earth's foundations, I was his architect at his side. I was his constant delight, rejoicing always in his presence. And how happy I was with the world he created, how rejoiced with the human family. And so, my children, listen to me, for all who follow my ways are joyful. Listen to my instruction to be wise. Don't ignore it. Joyful are those who listen to me, watching me daily at my gates, waiting for me outside my home. But whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord. But those who miss me injure themselves. All who hate me love death.
Well done, guys. Let's give these three a hand. Thank you so much. They're your memento. You can hang on to them. Yes, it's a souvenir. So maybe long, long ago, that might have happened in a room, and a bunch of people would have started talking about it and asking questions. What we're going to chat about this morning are three things: the value of wisdom, the person of wisdom, and the call of wisdom. The value of wisdom, the person of wisdom, and the call of wisdom. Verse 10 says this: choose my instruction rather than silver, and knowledge rather than pure gold, for wisdom is far more valuable than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with it. Nothing you desire can compare with wisdom. Let me ask you a question. What do we often desire as human beings in this world? There maybe are many things. But what do we desire? This is a question actually posed to King Solomon. Have you ever heard of this guy? Kids? Adults? Yes? King Solomon? Old king? Long ago? Right? Son of David? As King Solomon is taking the throne, God comes and says, what do you desire? What do you want? What do you want? Do anybody remember what Solomon says? Wisdom. All the things he could have asked for, Solomon asks for wisdom. And it's almost as if God is kind of surprised or taken aback and says, whoa, 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 do you know what most people ask for? Three things. Money. Yes, well done. Any other? Power. Mm-hmm.
Fame.
Yeah, that's not the third one, but I often ask for fame. So, yeah, it's true.
Security.
Yeah, long life. Long life. So power over his enemies, security in that sense too. Long life and wealth. God says that's what people tend to ask for, but you've asked for wisdom. Of all the things, wisdom. And so I'm going to make you more wise than anyone has ever been. Have you ever known someone who has all the money? Who has power? Who maybe has a long life? And yet you look at them and you can see that their life is a mess.
You ever known anybody like that? If you don't, just look around our world at who our world holds up as powerful and worthy of emulation, and you will likely see someone whose life is a mess. Solomon knew the value of wisdom. He knew that while riches are wonderful and power has an important place and long life is beautiful, if you don't have wisdom, your life can end up a mess. On the other hand, have you ever known someone who's not wealthy, who doesn't have a lot of power according to the world, and yet they lived a full, abundant life? Have you ever known anyone like that? It's probably because they had wisdom. I mentioned a couple of examples at the very beginning, and I just want us to think a little bit more about the role of wisdom and its value. Because in life, again, morality and information alone are not enough. Just take these examples. Should you marry that person? Should you get married at all? If you do get married, when should you get married? How much should you spend on the wedding? Should we invite crazy Aunt Martha or not? Right? These are decisions that require wisdom. Information alone, morality alone won't answer them. How about this? Should I buy this house? Is renting better at this moment? If we're going to buy, what neighborhood should we move into? How much should we spend? Depending on where we live, what school should we send our children to? Right? Those decisions require wisdom. Should I go to college? Where should I go to college? What degree should I pursue? Wisdom. Should I confront that person? If I should confront them, how do I confront them? What should I say or not say? Wisdom is required. Any one of those questions, I think you would agree, are incredibly significant. And if you've ever faced them, you know the weight of those moments when you have to try and figure out what to do. And in those moments, we need more than just information or more than just solid principles, as important as those things are. We need wisdom. Because here's the thing. Wisdom, I might define it this way, and you could define it a lot of ways. I think wisdom is the ability to see and understand things the way that they really are. Wisdom is the ability to see and understand things the way they really are. Wisdom is the ability to cut through the noise, to see through the murky complexity of your situation and understand which way to go or what to do. And which one of us here today does not need that ability more? Because life is infinitely complex and gray. We would love it to be black and white. It is not most of the time black and white. It is gray. And we need wisdom to navigate that murkiness. Should I take that job? Would that promotion be best for me? Would it be best for my family? Should we financially help that family member who's in a hard spot? If so, how much? When? In what way? Should I take the risky step of doing what I think God is asking me to do? How do I respond to the shootings in Charleston? What steps do I take to heal the racial wound? And on the questions go. I was listening to some podcasts, reading some books in preparation for this series, and Tim Keller quotes Gerhard von Rad, a German guy. Not Gerard, that's embarrassing. Gerhard von Rad. Is this being recorded? Can we just edit that out? He's a German pastor and professor. He's since passed away, but man, sharp guy. He writes this about wisdom. Wisdom is competency in regard to the realities of life. Wisdom is competency in regard to the realities of life. Yes, the wise have knowledge. That's good.
helpful. Yes, the wise have moral character, true and good. But the wise also have a character of heart and mind so that they always do the right thing, even when the rules don't apply. Even when it's not black and white and a moral principle can't guide you, even when information alone isn't enough, wise people make the right choices in the face of that complexity. I think this is the, I think these are the kinds of people we want to be. But how do we do it? We have the value of wisdom. In order to become wise, you have to understand the person of wisdom. What do I mean by that? If you pulled up chapter 8 on your phone or you're reading along on the screens, you might have noticed something that's really interesting about chapter 8 in Proverbs. And it's that wisdom in that chapter is not talked about as if it were an abstract thing. Do you notice this? Wisdom is personified. Wisdom is the one who calls from the streets. I call to you. I raise my voice to all people. Wisdom is personified, is speaking. And then that long section that Chris read, verse 22 and following, I was there before creation came into being. I was an architect by God's side. I took great delight in the beauty and complexity of the world. Wisdom is not a thing in Proverbs 8. Wisdom is a person. Which you may say, oh, well, that's really interesting. Ah, what a clever literary device, poetic move that's really kind of engaging, that's really interesting, and it is. But what if it's more? What if it's more than just poetry? Which, by the way, all of Proverbs is poetry. What if this personification of wisdom points us to a reality? If you have a Bible, you can turn to John 1. I'd invite you to do that. In John 1, there are echoes of Proverbs 8. I would argue loud, clanging echoes. In John 1, you may have heard this passage before. In the beginning was the Word. We find this phrase, the Word, over and over. It's the Greek word logos, which in Greek literature and in Greek philosophy of that day and time was a word just dripping with connotations of wisdom. So I don't think it's much of a stretch, actually. If we were to kind of paraphrase John 1, it might read this way. In the beginning, the wisdom already existed. The wisdom was with God, and the wisdom was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through wisdom, and nothing was created except through him. The wisdom gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to darkness. That light shines in the darkness, and darkness can never extinguish it. Wisdom is personified. Wisdom comes to us in Jesus. And we're told here that Jesus, just like wisdom, was there in the beginning. In Colossians 2, you don't have to turn here, you're welcome to, but in Colossians 2, it may be worth writing down if you're not going to turn there, so you can look at this later this week, but we find Paul writing about the Christians in the city of Laodicea, and Paul writes to them saying this, I want those people, those brothers and sisters in Laodicea, to have complete confidence that they understand God's mysterious plan, which is Christ himself. In him lie hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And then one more in 1 Corinthians 1, Paul writes this, God has united you with Christ Jesus, and for our benefit, God made him to be what? Wisdom itself. Wisdom is not just reading a book. Even the book of Proverbs, if you were to read it over the next 7 weeks, every word, if you were to memorize every word, you would not necessarily become more wise. Because wisdom is more than just reading or collecting information.
And the scriptures seem to be pointing us to the reality that wisdom is born out of relationship. If you want to be wise, you have to know the one who is wisdom itself. You have to sit at wisdom's feet. You have to heed wisdom's call. Listen again to Proverbs 8. I call to you, all of you. I raise my voice to all people. Choose my instruction rather than silver and knowledge rather than pure gold, for wisdom is far more valuable than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with it. See, wisdom is calling, which means that Jesus is calling. Come to me, all you who are tired, weary, worn out, and find rest for your souls. Take my yoke. By the way, yoke is the way of thinking about a way of life. Just take my yoke, my way, my wisdom on you, for my yoke is light. Jesus calls to us. He raises his voice to all people. Come, follow me. And so your homework this week, because this thing we do here on Sundays is not nearly enough to become wise. Your homework this week is to heed wisdom's call. To hear wisdom beckoning to you from the city square and from the gates, and to heed that call. If you're not quite sure how to do that, you're not quite sure what that might look like, I would encourage you to find a way this week to intentionally sit at the feet of Jesus. If you're not quite sure what that means, I'd encourage you to grab that book that you maybe have already grabbed this morning, or your phone, or your tablet, whatever, grab the Bible and read from the Gospels. It doesn't have to be terribly long even. Could be 10, 15 minutes. You don't even have to go on a retreat for half a day. Just would you carve out some time and would you read about this Jesus who is wisdom? And don't make it your goal in 15 minutes to plow through as much territory as you can. That's not the point. Just sit tight in a story. One story, and watch Jesus and listen to him and imagine yourself there and just sit at his feet. This is what Jesus' disciples did. They listened to him, yes. They received knowledge from him, good. But they also watched him live life. And the way that Jesus lived is the most wise way that anyone has ever lived. And in watching him live, they found an example for their own lives. And so would you sit at his feet this week? Because wisdom is born out of relationship. It's born out of knowing the one who is wisdom itself. If you do that, if you do that this week, you will become as wise as Solomon. Overnight, it will be magic. Three of you are awake. That was a joke. Like, that won't happen, actually. Don't expect that to happen. But you might begin to move a little bit more in wisdom. Sitting at Jesus' feet this week will not, once and for all, give you everything you need in the area of wisdom, but it will begin to move you towards the one who is wisdom himself. So let's be people who are wise. This world desperately needs people who are wise. It desperately needs wisdom. It doesn't actually need more information. Not most of the time. It needs wisdom. Let us be those people. Let's pray together. God, what we ask is for that to happen. And we know that in order for us to be people of wisdom, in order for us to be like your son, we will have to take a step and then another and then another. Wisdom won't just fall from the sky. And so I pray that you would help each one of us here today see what might be one step we could take this week that would help us grow in wisdom. It might look different for all of us, God. But what is that one thing? What step do we take? How do we begin to move more and more towards your way, towards your wisdom? We trust that you will help us in this journey and that it will be you who will change us and grow us. For that, we have confidence and give you thanks. Amen.